studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, doctors and nurses, I know you'll be shocked, sometimes actually go to work when they're sick, and it's more than sometimes.
Ouch, I don't believe it.
We will talk about this. It's published in JAMA Pediatrics. And then, interesting article, British Medical Journal looked at screen time at the adolescent mind. Does it really ruin the adolescent mind? We've talked a lot about it. This is controversial stuff. We will look at the science behind the screen.
And our recipe.
Watermelon and tomato salad. I love watermelon. I love tomatoes. I love them when they're both in season. You will want to listen to this
recipe.
Sounds
good. You don't usually think of those two things together.
No, we usually don't. So that's why it might be useful. And anything you can do to eat better produce and more produce is going to make you happier and healthier.
800-462-7413. And to the phones now, Zorba, with our first caller, a listener in Columbus, Montana. Hi.
Got an interesting problem that I'd like Zorba's opinion on.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of the only two men that I've talked to out here in Montana who have lost his fingerprints. And the interesting thing is, I not only have I lost them, I've consulted three different doctors, and none of them have ever heard of it. And one of them, in fact, said, "Well, you've got the whorls here, so you better not plan on robbing any bank."
Yeah, so then you haven't lost your fingerprints.
Well, I've lost, I don't know, I haven't had my fingers printed in a while. I had them printed numerous times during my professional career, but nothing recent.
Yeah, what was your professional career?
I'm a retired diplomat.
Oh, interesting. So how do you know? You just look at your finger and you think there isn't any fingerprint there?
Well, I first noticed it when I was trying to feel for a sharpened knife and couldn't make it, couldn't feel it.
So you've lost some of your sense of feeling at the end of your fingers. So a couple of things. So you're a retired diplomat, so lots of fingerprints during your life. So your fingers do not, they're sort of shiny. Is that one of the things that's happened?
Shiny and very smooth.
And very smooth. Anything else? Anything on your face that's smooth? Any aches or pains? You know, something else that's going on in your body? Your cheeks, are they smooth in some way or look like they're almost paper thin in terms of your skin?
Only when I don't shave.
Only when you don't shave. No, the reason why I said there's something called scleroderma, and scleroderma can actually produce a tightening of the skin so it looks like you've lost your fingerprint. If we actually press down and you actually had to go through security like I did when I applied for global entry, they actually could push down, and your fingerprint is still there in some fashion. Like you said, the whorls are still there. But you can lose, you can lose some of it as your skin becomes sort of, if you will, not as resilient and not as elastic. But getting back to the issue at hand, are you losing your sense of touch so you're not able to touch things and hold knives and things like that?
No, I can touch things. In fact, the skin is even more sensitive than it was.
More sensitive than what it was. So, well, you know, we lose our elasticity when we get older, and that's one of the reasons that we sag. I decided that I was going to diet down to my high school weight, and then I looked in the mirror, and you know what? I didn't have the same body I had in high school. I didn't know where the sags came from. They weren't there when I was 18 years old, that was for sure. And so part of this is the loss of the elasticity that's in your skin. I wouldn't be concerned. I would be concerned by a loss of sensation because that can be a loss in function.
I'm assuming there's nothing that can be done about it.
No, of course not. And actually, if you went, as I said, and you push hard enough, those fingerprints are still there. If you went and they pushed hard enough, they're actually still present there. It's just like your face changes as you get older. Your fingers also change. Your whole body changes when you get older. So, no. Besides, you could, if you wanted to, you could still be a diplomat even though your fingerprint is less than perfect.
At 70 years old, I don't think, 71 years old.
I don't think you'll be a diplomat. Hey, what was it like going through security with a diplomatic passport?
Very nice.
Very nice. Thanks so much for your call.
Appreciate it.
Bill, I was thinking exactly the same thing as our call. Look at that. Can you see any fingerprint?
Tell me the truth now.
Can I really see it? There's no print
there. Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know what? I read fingerprints. I read them for a living. That's what I do in my spare time. I go to fairs and I read the future of fingerprints.
Moving right along.
Haven't you always wanted to be able to read hands like the lifeline and see what you would read?
Do you ever have it done?
I did. I have had it done. I absolutely had it done. I even went to a channel.
You're going to live a long life too, right?
Hey, you know what? You know what? What can I tell you? Yeah. What can I tell you?
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 800-462-7413.
You know what I want? I want the diplomatic passport. That's what I want for that particular
caller. That'd be good. Jacksonville, Florida listener is with us now. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Approximately 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And most recently, as far as 6 months ago, I actually ended up in the hospital, and they think now that it is Crohn's. I've done quite a bit of research myself and just wanted to know if Dr. Zorba can maybe give me a few opinions in regards to the differences, maybe because I believe it's mainly an opinionated thing, the diagnosis by the doctors I've seen so far. Mm-hmm. The first time I was diagnosed was actually in August of 2012 by the specialist I'm still currently seeing, and he said it was ulcerative colitis. Mm-hmm. Most recently, about 6 months ago, I ended up in the hospital, and another specialist had seen me, and he told me that he believes I was misdiagnosed and that it is Crohn's. Uh-huh.
And they based it on a pathology? Did they do some samples? Did they do a colonoscopy? What did they do?
Yes, sir. Colonoscopy and endoscopy both times. And the samples were sent off to a lab and were reviewed. And after the hospital visit, I ended up going back to my original specialist and was told that he still believes it is ulcerative colitis.
I got a question for you. Why'd you go back to the original guy? How'd you make the decision to go to believe doctor number one versus doctor number two? What went into your decision?
Well, it's a clinic I'm going to, and it's supposed to be the top clinic here in Jacksonville, Florida. I had been seeing this specialist who's been practicing for over 30 years and he's supposed to be one of the better ones. So the specialist that also came from that clinic to visit me in the hospital was a younger physician, and he's the one that thinks I was misdiagnosed. So he told me to go back to my original specialist, and he was the one that basically said that he still thinks it's ulcerative colitis. The problem I'm having is the treatment they have me on is not necessarily working. They had me on Remicade, which is
Remicade, which is an expensive biological injection, which actually can work for both of them. I mean, they're, you know, that's a commonly used drug for both. A couple things here. First of all, you know, you make a decision, you have a controversy between two doctors, and you have to decide Dr. A or Dr. B. It's not always easy to do. I think you looked at it, you made the right choice for you. You said, I like Dr. Number One. He's been there in a long time, top clinic. I'm going to go with that doc, and I think that's very reasonable. The thing about UC, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's disease is sometimes it'll only make a difference over time. You have to have it watched, and sometimes you can't tell the difference. It may be A, it may be B. It's not black, it's not white, and following over time, often the diagnosis will come to be. So it's not 100% one or the other, and I think that's what you're stuck between. One doctor says one. I'd go with the doc who was around for 30 years. I'd do the same thing, who said, I think it's ulcerative colitis, but I'd have it followed carefully. The thing about Remicade, and there are a number of other drugs within that class, and I can't give you chapter and verse as to what they are, is if one doesn't work, you try another one. And there are other treatments for ulcerative colitis, which can be steroid enemas that can often be very, very useful. So I think the treatment then becomes another issue. And the treatment of both, both can be similar and they can be different. So I think going back to the first doc and saying, this is not working, I want to try a different doc is your answer. I don't think it's clear as to which one you have. I just want to put that in. You might have ulcerative colitis. You might have Crohn's. But over the next couple of years, I think it's going to declare itself based on that. But I'd stick with the doc with the reputation in the clinic that you liked initially. I think that's right. But I look towards some of these other things. Have you talked to your doc recently about the fact that you're still having lots of symptoms?
Yes. I've been on Remicade for the past approximately 6 months after I got out of the hospital. And he said sometimes it takes a few treatments.
Right.
So they still want to keep me on Remicade before they go off to, I believe, Humira.
Right. Humira is one of the other ones. I've got a question. Have you gone to a support group of inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis, or Crohn's disease? I'll tell you, I've got a really good recommendation. Go online, go to the ulcer. There's an Ulcerative Colitis Foundation, and there's a Crohn's Disease Foundation, and they have meetings of people with this, and this might just be helpful, either doing it online or in person and just talking with others that have had the same thing. Sometimes just that, you know, social networking with others, because you're not alone, can be very useful, because you've got a chronic disease that's going to ebb and flow. It's going to get better sometimes and worse other times. Sometimes it's good just to have other people to sort of bounce things off of.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, it says here, Zorba, that 83% of healthcare workers in a children's hospital, 83% have come to work sick in the last year,
at least once. Children's hospital. So, so I've been practicing for more than 30 years. I took off for 6 weeks when I fractured my ankle. I took off for 3 days when I had surgery on my shoulder, just for 3 days. So, and then when I had carpal tunnel, I had to take off for a few days because I couldn't hold the charts when I walked into the room.
Yeah.
After that, how many days did I take off when I was sick in 30 years of practice?
Zero.
No, not zero, but less than six. That's about it. Except when I was vomiting. You can't come to work when you're vomiting. Nobody really wants this. But that's what this article shows. 80%, they looked at about 300 doctors.
Yeah.
80% went in when they had a cough or a cold. This is in a children's hospital. 60% with congestion and a sore throat. And 21, in other words, one out of five of them said they would come to work with a fever. I mean, I would never go to work with
that's
a fever.
That's really wrong.
Fever. And 10% would come to work even if they were vomiting. So this is ridiculous. Doctors, heal thyself.
And this is self-identified. This is doctors saying that.
Right. This is doctors saying that. Doctors and nurses.
How about
doctors
the ones that are, you know, not telling the truth?
Come on. Doctors and nurses always tell the
doctors
truth.
And
they
nurses
never
always
lie.
Tell
Physicians never lie.
I mean,
nurses
we're sort of
lie.
Joking about this, but this isn't exactly a joking matter.
This is in a children's hospital where you could get children sick, you know. Well, you know, I think it's like, if I don't go to work, somebody else is going to have to do my work. I can tough it through. You know, what happens is there are no guidelines. Doctors and nurses write the guidelines for other people, but they don't write the guidelines
Doctor,
for themselves.
Doctor, heal thyself.
Yeah, I mean, they don't say temperature over 100.5 degrees, don't come to work. Come on, you know, I mean. You know, I wouldn't come to work at 102. But, I mean, it shows you how we don't pay attention to our own guidelines. And this is in a children's hospital.
Yeah.
So they may be getting children sick. These are sick. Kids in children's hospitals are sick. So what should we do, Tom? Come on. You write the guidelines.
There's no fix for this.
There's no fix?
Well, what are you going to do? Examine every doctor before they
actually,
go to work?
Actually, that's what it is. When you come to work, we'll make sure you take your temperature.
There isn't really any
That's it. You've got the answer. When you come to work, take your temperature.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. You have given the answer to this.
Yeah.
I love it.
And there isn't any real fix for
There's
this.
No real fix.
Just talk about it on the radio.
Doctors will
talk
not
talk about it on the radio and say if you're
that's
a doc
right.
and happen
that's
to
right.
be listening.
Well, we have docs who listen. We have nurses who listen. We get a lot of good comments from doctors and nurses, so maybe they'll listen to us. Now, will I take my temperature if I feel sick? So will I not come into work? That's what you ask me. Go ahead, ask me that question.
Okay, it's asked.
I promise, Scout's honor here. Is this the Scout thing?
That's the Scout thing. Yeah.
Isn't it? No, it's like this. I think I have that wrong. It's not the fingers like this. I think that's Scout's honor. I was a Cub Scout. I never made it to Boy Scout.
Yeah, I was a Cub, too.
Were you an Eagle Scout?
I never made it to Boy Scout. Anyway.
You never made it to Boy Scouts either?
800-462-7413.
Why did we make it to Boy Scouts?
I don't know. I dropped out. 800-462-7413. Let's change the subject with a listener now, Zorba, in Mequon, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Sure. What's up?
Now, I am calling from a cell phone. I hope it doesn't drop on you. I'm actually at Indian Summer Honey Farm just outside
Ooh.
Of Mequon. My girl. So if you hear children or chickens in the background, that's what's going on.
Children and chickens. Okay, I've got
children
it now.
Children and chickens. I am calling with a question about pelvic dysfunction. I've had two children.
By the way, I hear the chickens in the background. I just wanted to tell you.
Okay. And I was having really, really severe hip pain. Mm-hmm. My youngest child is 2, just turning 3 now, actually. And so this is 3 years postpartum, and I'm still, you know, recovering, which is, I think, something that we neglect as, you know, a society, that women's bodies are still changing, you know, after they've had their babies. So pelvic dysfunction, some issues with iliopsoas muscle.
Mm-hmm. So how can we help you?
Yep. Are you there? Hello? I think we lost our call.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, she's not there. Well, she brought up a very good point. When women get pregnant, there are lots of things that are going on in the pelvis that change in the pelvis. And hip pain turns out to be a very, very common problem because basically the ligaments are kind of loosening. So when the baby comes out, they can give a little bit and the head can come through the birth canal and so on. And usually, after the baby is born, things return to normal, but they don't always return to normal. I mean, sometimes there's a change that's actually occurred. And hip pain in women postpartum can last sometimes for years.
So what do you do? Yeah.
Well, you start out with – the first thing you start out with is a non-drug way, and that's really looking towards pelvic exercises that are good. We'll put that on our website, zorbapastor.org. I'll put a connection either to some written exercises or YouTube exercises specifically for women postpartum. So that's one of the things that you can do in a very natural way. Sometimes a glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, take it for 6 to 12 weeks. Can actually help strengthen the ligaments, can make a difference. And then the final thing is, if you're bothered, like this woman was, she was out with her kids, you know, and, you know, if you're really bothered, on those days you're bothered, you take 2 Aleve tablets, you know, and you just, you don't, you know, you live with it in the fact that you have to take some Aleve tablets to do it. And those are the things to do. Sorry we lost our call. Yeah. Wish she was there, but, you know, that's sometimes what life is like.
Listening on the radio, caller, we hope that helped you out.
That's right.
Before we take a quick break, Zorba, it's time again to dive into the murky waters of medical quackery in our newest segment we call Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, tell us about this turn-of-the-century fitness guru, Bernard McFadden.
Oh, McFadden was incredible. I mean, he said fasting would make students stronger and keener in a week. All you have to do with fast. So picture it. He said students should fast even, you know, we believe that breakfast is good, and there's very good studies that show it. Not McFadden. He said breakfast was bad. You've really got to fast it. And then he told, after they fasted for a few days, and we're talking about 1 or 2 or 3 days without food, he recommended that they should eat all the grapes that they could possibly eat. That grapes were there. The doctors at that time were completely outraged. They said, wait a minute, you want these kids and you want adults to fast and eat grapes? So he gave a prize. He said, I will give a prize of $10,000 to anyone who can prove that eating grapes does not cure cancer.
Well, that's backwards, obviously.
In other words, proving that eating grapes does not prove cancer.
Shouldn't it have been up to him to prove
that eating grapes,
that grapes had this magical.
No. So then, but he had the support of naturopaths, chiropractors, all sorts of stuff. But his big issue was physical culture. And I don't know if you remember, do you remember what physical culture was back in the 50s?
No idea.
Well, physical culture was what we would call bodybuilding today. And he would have scantily clad men and women engage in physical culture. And he started a school called the Physical Culture University. And they were tents all over this area. And he would have one man and one woman who would share a tent together, sleep in the tent for 2 to 3 weeks while they would engage in physical culture. And he thought it was very important. When you have 2 guys in the same tent, you would have a man and a woman in a tent engaging in physical culture university, and they got to choose who they wanted to stay in the same tent with. They had 2 cots, don't get me wrong.
Sex.
They did not have sex. They were engaging in talking about physical culture. What? They slept on army cots, so they were army cots. They couldn't possibly have sex on those army cots, right? I'm sure it wasn't possible. Right, Tom?
It's probably possible.
That's exactly it. So that is McFadden, Physical Culture University. Fast for 3 or 4 days.
Grapes?
Eat nothing but grapes. Do not eat before you want to think or go to school, because therefore you will interfere with your brain.
Not many people could actually believe.
Well, they did. They believed.
In the 50s?
Of course they did. No. This was in 1900.
Oh, okay.
This was in 1900. No, by the 50s, it had already, I think it was just proven actually by about 1910. So once again, good non-scientific studies laid to waste. We'll put it into the dustbin of history.
Quacking with the doc. Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this new segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. We love those quackery things that you can find for us.
We have a recipe coming up. It's a delicious recipe. Lots more of your calls, of course. Some of your emails. Right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health at PRI Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, watermelon and tomato salad.
Now, do you like watermelon?
Sure. Who doesn't?
I love
Everybody
watermelon.
Likes watermelon.
You know, I mean, and now that we have seedless watermelons that taste good, I mean, who would buy a seeded watermelon? Remember? That was the big issue years ago. Although I remember...
It wasn't that hard, you know.
But still, you had to spit out the seeds, or you had to pick the seeds out. You kind of had to work...
Oh, my goodness. what a problem.
All right, what a problem.
Amazing anyone ever ate
those. Ever ate watermelon.
Anyway, these are seedless now. Okay.
And then tomato. Okay. Yeah. And tomatoes, of course, are perfect.
Yeah.
This time of year. Okay, start out with 8 cups, 1 1/4 inch, you know, these chunks of seedless watermelon. That's about 6 pounds of watermelon.
Okay, 8 cups, 1 1/4 inch or so chunks of seedless watermelon.
How many pounds do you think a watermelon weighs when you pick it up? What do you think?
Well,
a gallon of milk is 8 pounds.
Yeah, I have no idea. 15.
No, but I don't think it's 15 pounds for a watermelon. I think it's about 8 pounds. You think it's about fit? What kind of... You know something? You buy big watermelons, don't you?
I don't remember ever a watermelon.
I was going to say, when was the last time you bought a watermelon and brought it home?
Moving right along.
Okay. 3 pounds of ripe tomatoes cut into, again, chunks, about 6 mm-hmm. cups of tomatoes.
3 pounds of ripe tomatoes, mm-hmm. cored and cut into chunks.
That's right. If you use Aroma, it's going to have, you know, more pulp within it. If you're going to use, you know, pick the tomato that you like to use. You know, other tomatoes, Big Boy is going to become more juicy on the inside. Mm-hmm. A teaspoon of coarse kosher salt. You could use sea salt.
Mm-hmm. Little tea, coarse kosher salt.
5 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
5 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
Tablespoonful and a half of red wine vinegar.
1 1/2 big tea red wine vinegar.
3 tablespoonfuls of assorted herbs. So you could use dill, basil. You could use mint if you want to. Mm-hmm.
3 big tea herbs.
So let me tell you what I have in the house. I've had herb gardens away from the house. I never tend them. I never use them. Mm-hmm. So about 5 years ago, I thought to myself, I'm going to put these in pots right in front of my front door. So I have chives, I have basil, I have oregano, I have margarine, and at the end, I have these bunches of mint. And what happens is I walk outside my front door.
And you notice them?
And I use them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I use them all the time. And it used to be if it was in the garden, I didn't. I use them nearly as much.
Good idea.
And, you know, you can put them in your windowsill, and I'll tell you something, they add so much flavor to any salad.
And they look kind of neat, too.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to take a picture and put it on our Facebook page.
Okay.
Do you ever look at our Facebook page?
Do we have a Facebook page?
All right, moving right along with the Luddite. 6 cups of arugula.
6 cups arugula.
5 ounces of crumpled feta cheese.
5 ounces crumpled feta cheese.
1/2 cup of sliced almonds lightly toasted.
1/2 cup sliced almonds lightly toasted.
Doesn't that sound good?
It does.
It really is good.
It sounds delicious.
So combine the melon and the tomatoes in a large bowl, then sprinkle with a little salt. Toss it to blend about 15 minutes. And that's very important because the salt moves the juice out of the watermelon and out of the tomato. You've got to let it sit for about 15 minutes. Do not do it quickly. And kosher salt or sea salt is important to use versus regular salt. Regular salt will work, but not as well. Then add the olive oil, vinegar, and herbs to the mixture. Season it to taste if you need a little more salt or pepper. Toss the arugula in a medium bowl with the remaining olive oil. Divide the arugula among the plates. Top with melon salad. Sprinkle with feta cheese, some toasted almonds on top, and serve it. And bon appetit. It's a wonderful dish.
And I can get this recipe somewhere on the computer?
Shocking. Shocking that you can actually pull this down and you can do that. We no longer have Gigi, who was the one who used to send it out. I used to call it snail mail. I was told by our postman that was insulting. So I will now call it United States Government Mail.
Mm-hmm.
However, you cannot get it that way. Right. Go to our website, zorbapastor.org, and you can find a lot of things in there. Pictures of Tom, pictures of me, wonderful recipes in the background. That's zorbapastor.org. Remember, you can find us on Facebook or follow my tweets at Dr. Zorba. That's Dr. Zorba. Follow my tweets. Hashtag Dr. Zorba.
You're certainly excited by all of this.
I am excited. By social media.
800-462-7413. That's on the phone. 800-462-7413. To a Spokane, Washington listener we go now, Zorba. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
It's a pretty simple question. For simple cuts and scrapes, I was looking online, and there seems to be a little bit of a debate as to whether, a lot of the sites that I said, that I read said that you keep the cuts and scrapes warm and moist. You cover them with dressings. You put antibiotic cream on there. But then I've also heard that you should air them out and let the scabs form. And these seem to be pretty diverse opinions.
Absolutely the case. Now, the question is, do you believe my mother or my father? it's like feed a cold, starve a fever. Where did that come from? Starve a cold or feed a fever?
It's feed a cold, starve a fever.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what
it is. Yeah, of course, yeah. Mothers are mothers. So I'll tell you what. I'll tell you how you treat a wound from a doctor's scientific point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, when you see anecdotes, on the web and they're differing sites, on the whole, it often means that there's no correct answer, but I'll give you the answer that we do.
Yeah.
What you do is, first of all, you clean the wound. You wash it off. Soap and water is wonderful. It doesn't matter. Just you want to clean it. You want to wash it off. You then want to put something on it to sort of protect that open wound. Triple antibiotic ointment is good. Bacitracin is good. Frankly, Vaseline is good, too, because it will basically keep it from a friction point of view. That's really what you want to do. Then you cover it with a bandage. And the reason why you cover it with a bandage is to keep the friction off the wound, because friction can actually cause problems with the wound. And then you're sort of sealing it from the outside. And that's what you do.
Thank you very much.
Now, do you get a lot of wounds?
So this really started with I took a long walk in my – I've got some sandals that are actually good, high-quality hiking sandals.
Okay.
They do kind of eat into the skin on my feet, and so on the backs of my heels, I got some pretty good-sized wounds.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't realize that Vaseline or antibiotic ointment is more of a reducing friction.
Right. That's exactly what you want to do. When you friction on a wound, it doesn't do it. But I want to go back a step. So you called them good, high-quality sandals that then eat into your skin and cause you pain. Where is the good? Where's the good in this picture? I want to know what good is.
As in the soles of these sandals are tire rubber. They're nice and thick and good arch support. But any amount of walking without a sock on, friction's going to happen.
Okay, so are you wearing socks now to keep yourself from getting disturbed and destroying the skin in the wound?
Yes, yes.
But socks, one of the reasons, by the way, when you hike, I was in Nepal a couple of times off the grid for a month, and I double socked because double socking when you're walking for 6 to 10 hours reduces friction and keeps the skin intact.
Yeah, but socks with sandals, that's not fashionable at all.
No, but you're talking to someone from Spokane, and socks with sandals are
right.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. It's a cultural issue. That's right. In Spokane, it's okay. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
You know, Tom, you have just brought up something I think that we really should have here now. We now need
the fashion police. Let's get back to the phone. Zorba, a West Bend, Wisconsin listener with us now. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. Well, my big question is about lab reports and nutrition absorption. I'm wondering, do some people fall outside the normal ranges? Like, for them, normal would not be what the normal ranges are when they check for things like your iron and your protein?
100%. And I'll explain what that is. So first of all, have you taken Statistics 101 in college?
Yes, but I don't remember much.
Exactly. But you remember that it was difficult, right? You remember it was like,
yes.
It was like nobody takes it electively. No one says, well, there are some people, I take that back. That is the rare person who says, gee, I think I'll take statistics because I think it's going to be fun. But 95% of the people, and that's exactly where it fits, would say no. So there's the bell-shaped curve, right?
Right.
You've got the bell-shaped curve. When you make it, you give it what's called a 95% confidence level, limit. That means that on both sides of the tail of the curve, 2.5% of the upper end and 2.5% of the lower end are going to be wrong. So 95% of the time, if you're looking at an abnormal test, 95% of the time, that test really has some meaning. It may be abnormal. It may have a little meaning or a lot of meaning, okay? But it may have a little or a lot. But 5% of the time, 2.5% on each side of the curve, you will be catching normal people, but the test says it's abnormal. Now I have a question for you. Why are you concerned?
Well, I have a pattern of very low numbers on protein, iron, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
For example, my iron, the last 6 tests, the normal range is 50 to 170.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't even get close to 50.
So I've got a question for you. You've had this worked up to make sure you don't have an iron deficiency anemia?
Well, I don't know.
How old are you?
68.
You've had a colonoscopy?
Yeah, that last fall, I had a colonoscopy and the upper GI endoscopy.
Okay, so they wanted to make sure you didn't have a bleed, because that's commonly when we find cancers, because of that. And then you want to make sure you've had iron studies that are done. You may, you know, if you've had all the iron studies done, if you've had B12 and folate looked at too, which are part of the workup for anemia, if you've had a colonoscopy and the doctors are not concerned and it's stable, some people just have a low normal iron count.
Well, my doctor's having me take pretty heavy doses of iron, which, you know, I'm a little concerned about that, too. You know, long-term, should I be taking that much iron?
Is your doctor a hematologist?
He sent me to a hematologist.
That's where you want to be. So there's sometimes people get iron in order to get that, but you're right to be concerned, because you can have an iron storage disease, have too much iron, then that can affect your liver, and that can actually produce some other problems. So if they continue with it and the numbers don't improve, I am a great believer in a second opinion with some of these things. And so if you're not satisfied, I would go to another hematologist and say, can you look at all this and does this make sense? Or do I just have a low normal iron count, which some do. Some of us fall out of the normal range. And if you rule out disease, then you just may be somebody who falls out of the normal range.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're most welcome. You take care.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we take a break, Zorba, time to hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, We are about to hear from a very specialized unit of the Grammar Police, the Imaging Police. Today's correction comes to us from a listener named Larry, who listens on WHAD in Milwaukee. He writes, Dr. Zorba, I've never imagined me as being part of your police, but a recent show motivated me to form a new branch, the Imaging Police. You were advising a caller on getting a definitive diagnosis on gallstones and recommended an ultrasound. That's sound advice. However, at the end of the call, you said not once but twice to get an echo. As you know, echo is short for echocardiogram, a cardiac ultrasound. So this poor lady may be asking her primary doc to get a test for gallstones in her heart. Please be more exact in your imaging terminology in the future. As a medical imaging systems engineer, this slip just leapt out of the radio at me. Keep up the good and entertaining work, guys.
I will be careful. I will be careful because one is an ultrasound of the heart, and that's the mnemonic for the ultrasound of the heart, the echo, and the other is really the echo, what I would call echo, but it's really just the ultrasound of the gallbladder. It uses a similar modality of imaging, but I will make sure that I do not confuse people because I don't want their heart checked when it's really the gallbladder. Thank you.
Do you think Zorba has an image problem?
Oh, gosh.
Just send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or through Facebook.
A bit of interesting research coming up next. More of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, does modern technology affect kids' brains?
Well, this is a big issue. It's not a small issue. We talked about it a lot, how we should limit screen time so we get our kids outside and doing things. And that still holds true. We should still limit screen time. The real issue, though, and that's because you want kids to do other things.
Yeah, they should get exercise.
The real issue is, does this actually cause harm? And there's been a hue and cry over a researcher at Oxford who said that that she can show that it actually causes internal harm to the brain of children who actually spend too much time in front of the screen. Mm-hmm. However, she will not release any of her data, even though she's, quote, publishing it, to peer-reviewed journals to actually show whether or not the data shows anything. And there are a number of scientists who say, wait a minute, there's no evidence we are causing harm to the brain of our children by having them engage in the Internet. And here's one of her most controversial issues. She is saying that too much Internet use and screen time can cause autism. Yet, there are many children who have autism who can actually engage in social media, and they can't engage in media in interactions which are one-to-one looking at one another. So it's terrible stuff that she is spreading.
Yeah, and you're saying this is not true?
Well, there's no scientific evidence that you're actually causing any harm within the brain, actually triggering autism, actually showing that something is going wrong, that it's causing mental deficiency. We know that screen time interferes with general interaction, doesn't allow kids to go outside and do things. But it's not actually causing physical harm to the brain. You remember when you were a kid, your parents said if you sit too close to the TV, it has radiation and you'll go blind?
Yeah.
This is similar to that.
Yeah, but do we really know that for a fact?
Well, we know for a fact that that there is no scientific evidence that the brain is developing differently when you're looking in front of a TV screen. Like anything else, kids should still limit it because it limits other activities that are important for growth and development.
Yeah. So, but what we know is that we don't know. of any.
Well, right. And I think that's the important point. We have a number of researchers now. This one researcher specifically is saying, wait a minute, there is scientific evidence. I have it. But you're not going to release it to actually be
looked at?
Yeah, that
doesn't make any sense, does it?
It doesn't make any sense. And I think this brings up another very important point. When you look at things on the internet and people make claims and they make anecdotal claims and they say, wait a minute, I can show this. You say, wait a minute, show me the numbers. Show me the beef. Show me where stuff actually occurs. And if they're not willing to release the data and have it looked at it, there's something fishy. And if it smells fishy, it is fishy. And if there's not science behind it, you have to question whether or not there is an ulterior motive.
800-462-7413, the number if you have a question for Zorba. As we get back to the phones now, Zorba, with a listener in Havre, Montana. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I actually have a two-part question. The first part is that I've struggled with weight gain my whole life. And I would really like to know why it is so much harder to lose weight as we age, regardless of whether we use the same approaches that we have in the past. And sort of related to that, I've done a search of the scientific literature, and it's led me to try adding probiotics to my daily regimen. And my food cravings really seem to have decreased. And I just wonder, what effect does the human microbial biome have on weight loss? And could probiotics play more of a role as we age?
Uh-huh. Well, you bring up a lot of good points. First of all, as we get older, we lose muscle mass. So 1% of our muscle mass is less. If you weigh the same thing at the age of 70 as you did at the age of 17, you do not have the same muscle mass. Look in the mirror. You can see the difference. Try to lift something. You can see the difference. And so we don't burn as much. That's the first thing. In times of plenty, our body wants to take up and put a little fat on there because, you know, heretofore, if you look back 20 generations, 10 generations even, food was not around as much as it was before. So as soon as there was extra food, we put on that weight because a month later, we may not have enough food. For most of the time that Homo sapiens have been around, it has been feast or famine, and a lot of the time it's been famine, where people have been hungry. It is very unusual within our life, within the lifespan of our species, when we were not hungry. You know, and so the reality is when we have food, we're hungry because it was evolutionarily important to actually put on that weight. So the cravings are there because they helped you survive. Well, and nowadays when calories are cheap, they don't help you survive. And that's the real issue. So you've got to eat so many fewer calories, and then you have the cravings on one side. Scientific literature, probiotics have not been shown to be useful at all. You may try them. We do know there's some very good early evidence that the biome, if you will, the bacteria that live in the gut may actually play a role in in overweight. We know that. We don't have the foggiest idea what that's about. We're just at the beginning, if you will. It's just sort of rudimentary evidence that this may have an effect, that people who are heavier might have different bugs, you know, bacteria in there. But if you want a good article on it, the New England Journal of Medicine 2 years ago or 3 years ago did a review article of the scientific evidence. And it's a weighty article, but if you look at the abstract of the article, it'll tell you a few things. First of all, yo-yo diets are not bad. People who lose weight and gain weight and lose weight and gain weight, we've been saying it's bad for the body. Zero scientific evidence that it's bad for the body. People who go on low-calorie diets to sort of kickstart it, we've said that's bad. The answer is no, it's not bad at all. Some people kickstart their diets with an 800-calorie, very low-calorie diet. It's actually good for them. And the other thing I remember from the article is things like Jenny Craig, which we do not get support from the show, but if they want to give us $1 million for the show, please give us $1 million. But things like Jenny Craig actually work. They actually make a difference. That people who are on a regimented diet and lose weight, actually, 2 years later, a lot of them actually keep the weight off. So we doctors also support the wrong things. Going to a nutritionist and registered dietitian is not any better than going to Weight Watchers if you look 2 years later. And I know that I send people to our registered dietitians to help kickstart it, but Weight Watchers is just as good. So go to this New England Journal of Medicine article. Save your money when it comes to probiotics, except by eating yogurt. Yogurt is the best probiotic on the market and costs as much as a container of yogurt, and it's tasty. And you got to kickstart it with a very low-calorie diet that may work for you.
All right. Thank you.
I hope that helps.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. And before the next caller, Zorba, we often have a segment called Disagreeing with the Doc. But every once in a while, someone actually agrees with you.
You know, that's news to me.
Here's an email from a listener, Lacey, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, I am a pediatric resident in Oklahoma, and this past week's show was just great. First, a caller in Oklahoma called about her child's tongue tie, born in the hospital where I currently train. You handled a situation we residents run into daily with great finesse, and I'm so grateful. Thank you for reassuring this parent. The next caller's child,
Thank you.
The next caller's child has a possible eating disorder, and you stuck to your guns when the mom didn't want to hear it. I'm also a mom, so I understand not wanting to hear this kind of thing, but we need to hear it. Great job today."
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Very nice compliment. I really, really appreciate it.
If you agree with something Zorba said, just send your warm fuzzies and an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget Facebook.
800-462-7413. And a St. Paul, Minnesota listener with us now, Zorba. Hi.
Hi. Love your show.
Thanks. How can we help?
Thank you.
I don't believe I'm calling about this, but I'm 61 years old, and after refusing for many years, I finally had my first colonoscopy, and it went just fine.
Good. Wonderful.
But now I'm wondering if there's any health benefit from doing a cleanse, maybe a couple of times a year, even without a colonoscopy?
A lot of people do cleanses. So you're talking about a cleanse using an enema, or are you talking about fasting?
No, a similar cleanse like was required for the colonoscopy, we had, which was a low-fiber diet for a couple of days, and then Delcolax and a mixture of a bottle of Miralax with like a half a gallon of Gatorade.
Half a gallon, that's right. Actually, it seems more like about 3 to 4 gallons. I've had my colonoscopy. Thomas had my colonoscopy. The colonoscopy
I haven't had
is
your colonoscopy. I have my own.
You know, English will always trip you up, no matter what you do. The answer is no. There is no evidence that cleansing out your body and just getting rid of all of that poop that's in your gut is actually going to clean things. It probably comes from, you know, cleanliness is next to godliness and this sort of Germanic, Northern European idea that we should be as clean as possible. And it comes from von Humboldt and his idea about cleanliness and physical culture years ago, that was an important thing. Even the Greeks knew about that. Look at the Romans. They had the Roman bath, so the idea that we should clean things because it's better. But the gut does a wonderful job. You know, we live with these bacteria. There's no reason to get rid of them. Fasting, though, is a common thing that people do, and they'll fast for a day or two, and they'll find it useful, and they feel better afterwards. And I'm definitely pro-fasting for people who believe that. But I don't see any reason to try to clean out the gut to get rid of the poop that's in there. It doesn't really – there's no evidence that it does anything.
Diverticulosis.
Yeah, but there are very interesting things about diverticulitis. First of all, we all have them. And when I say we all, I think probably 80 to 90%. And we don't find them unless we do a colonoscopy. And these are little pockets in the colon. And the thought is, well, stuff will get stuck in these little pockets. And for years, we doctors, me included, would say, well, a seed will get stuck in that pocket and then it'll get inflamed and you'll need surgery. But in fact, that is not true. And the reality is our body does a good way of getting rid of it. High-fiber diet is good. And if you want to sort of cleanse your colon, Metamucil, which is the flower of the psyllium seed, is probably the best way to do it. And I would just do that. Metamucil is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's not a drug. It's just great for the colon. And if you want to keep your colon healthy, that's what I would do. I wouldn't do Miralax. I would do Metamucil. And full disclosure, although I may own mutual funds, I do not believe I own stock in the Metamucil company.
Very good. Thanks much.
Sure.
You're welcome. Thanks. And glad you finally gave in and got that colonoscopy.
And before we head out today, Zorba, let's take an email question from a loyal listener named Brandy. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I need help. When I fly, I get very dizzy after the flight, and this usually ruins my whole trip. When I arrive back home, I'm usually dizzy for up to 2 weeks. Most of the time, I have to stay in bed on our vacations because it affects me so much, I am not well enough to do anything. In a few weeks, I am flying with my family to see our daughter graduate from boot camp and want to be able to enjoy our time with her. Any advice that you can help me with?"
Well, that's a tough issue, and especially if you then have that dizziness. You know, if you go on—
This is a major thing,
oh,
2 weeks.
Oh, it's major. Oh, that's what I mean. You know, I don't like roller coasters, but I occasionally have gone to amusement parks, and I'll feel dizzy, and it lasts for a few hours, but it does not last for a few weeks. One of the recommendations that I would have a couple things. I would hit it with everything you have. Number one, I would start an antihistamine the day before. I would get Dramamine, which is very good for dizziness. It'll make you sleepy. I would start the Dramamine the day before, and I would take it the day of the trip prior to that. And then I would consider the scopolamine patch along with it. And the scope patch, a scopolamine patch you get from your doctor, we often give it for people who get seasick. You put it behind your ear. You actually can put it anywhere on your body where there's thin skin behind the ear. There are other places where there's thin skin in the body too, but behind the ear works really well. And I would start that the day you actually do the flight. And that's probably going to help a lot. The scope patch plus Dramamine may help. You're going to be tired from both of those. So that means get 8 hours of sleep the day before. Make sure you do that. If you like coffee and caffeine, make sure you caffeinate yourself up with that. And if you can just get this thing to stop, then you will stop having the anticipation of dizziness and nausea. And part of what fits into this anticipation that I'm going to be nauseous. You know, often we anticipate something like nausea, we get nauseous. Mm-hmm. So hit it full force. That may make a difference. Scope patch, Dramamine, good luck.
Have a question that has your head spinning? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or follow me tweeting on Dr. Zorba. And remember, get social on Facebook.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7411. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Camera Hog Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Camera Shy Colberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0829Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.